Good morning, all. It's good to greet you in the name of the Lord. We are gathered here by his invitation and by his grace, and we pray that he will minister to us. It's been a while since we've been here together. You've been here. We are grateful to Neil Wright for teaching us so well in the last few weeks, and I hope you express your thanks to him as well. Thank you, Neil, for all that you do for the class. Some of you have been wondering where we've been since we were last here. I checked the notes. I think it was May 8th. Where has the summer gone? And we have been hither and yon. Some of you ask about the first thing that happened after we broke up, and that was the Israel tour. We did get back safe and sound, and a couple of you were there with us. Wonderful to have you with us. And some of you are asking if this will happen again. We have it in pencil, spring of 2018. Those of you who are interested, it's in pencil. If there isn't a groundswell of support for this, we won't do it. But we would, if you are interested in doing this kind of thing, let us know. Talk about it. It's important for people who are interested in these kinds of things to know about them 18 months ahead, so you can plan your schedules accordingly. In any case, that's where that stands. Since then, we've been to England, Vancouver, wherever else the Lord has blessed us richly. Most recently, of course, the reason why we've not been here when the class started is we were in Australia. We flew into Sydney, that's long enough, but then to sit around in the airport for 2 hours and another 5 hours to Perth. I'd never been to Perth before. It is, they claim, the most isolated city in the world. No other major city is so far removed from another major city in the world. And they feel it. But it was a wonderful time at Perth. We were at Trinity Theological College. It's a non-denominational, though essentially Presbyterian in outlook. I had 22 people in my class. Only two were taking it for credit. The rest were from all over Western Australia, church leaders, pastors, denominational leaders, there were four Anglican chaps in the class, one of whom is involved in leadership in the Anglican diocese out here. The light of the gospel in Australia is small, but that light that there is bright. And so it was wonderful to be here. Australia is a far more secular country than ours is, and they don't understand us, how religious issues get mixed up with politics at all. But in any case, the light here in Perth is shining, and it was great to be with the folks there. Then on to Brisbane, back across the outback, where I was at Queensland Theological College. Some of you know Doug O'Donnell, who's over there. I should have put up a picture of us. They have an apartment overlooking the river. It's absolutely gorgeous. But it was good to be with them at Queensland Theological College, where I taught for a week. And then lastly, we were down in Sydney at Moore Theological College, an Anglican school, and had a wonderful time there. In each of these situations, I taught all day, long days, Monday to Friday, and we are still here, still standing. And God is gracious. And it was just a blessed time. We were inspired. Ellen and I were inspired by God's people everywhere. The reception to us was warm. And God is at work. And that's really exciting in these places. So anyhow, that's over. The summer it's a summer like we've never had before. But it was all amazingly good. Thank you for your prayers and for your interest in what we are doing. If this is retirement, I don't know what. Anyhow, I'm not quite there yet, but.
Just a question, is any one of the theological schools
I have no idea.
More is connected.
It never came up in conversation. So, yeah. So, in any case, any other questions?
What's going on?
Hey, we got to get. I had a guy in my class down at Moore who was from Darwin. This was an MA class at Moore. And the situation is different over there. The MA people in the MA program at Moore are all out there in ministry. They come back for these courses. And so it was so. The class here in Perth and there in Sydney were similar because these were people out in the field. And to discuss the gospel according to Moses at Moore with those Anglican folks, and to discuss the gospel according to Ezekiel over here at Trinity with people who are actually in the field, they've got such probing questions, and it stimulates you to work at a very practical level on the one hand. Question is always, what's the ministerial significance of this? And so that was fun to work with them. But yes, we did have a guy from of the people at Brisbane, there were half a dozen came from up there, northern Queensland, but that's the hot part of the country, the jungles. But didn't get there. We didn't get to the Great Barrier Reef. I mean, we were working. One of these days, we'll go and have a holiday over there. And people said, you should have gone to New Zealand. That's the real place to go to have a holiday. Anyhow, the answer is yes, we should have gone to. But in any case, here we are. The Lord has sustained us, and we traveled safely, and we are relatively well, relatively awake. And so we are gathered for the study of the Word. All right. Into the depths of Mordor. There's where we are headed today. We are dealing in the, and it'll take a couple of weeks for us to get out of Mordor. It's important for us to wrestle with what we are facing in this huge chapter, the largest chapter, 69 verses, by the Hebrew verse numbering, the largest chapter in the book of Deuteronomy, but it deals with such serious and deep theological and hermeneutical issues. How can you as a Christian read the Bible when you've got this stuff there? And so we have to wrestle very seriously with what we are dealing with today. For those of you who haven't been with us, we are in Deuteronomy chapter 28. The first 14 verses we dealt with in the spring, they deal with the Shire, where life as it should be, the idyllic world of God's blessing. But then when you come to verse 15, everything goes south, and south to Mordor, if you know the map. In any case, we must, again, to remind ourselves what we're working with, read the whole text. I've mentioned before, many times, that the Scriptures were written to be heard whole cloth, not piecemeal. And so I'm going to read chapter 28 again from the New Living Translation. Don't try and follow in your Bibles. It'll be distracting. You'll be troubled by the differences in translation. And if you've got NLT, you'll be troubled by my inability to read. Just hear. Hear the word of the Lord. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully keep all his commands that I am giving you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the world. You will experience all these blessings if you listen to the voice of the Lord your God. Your towns and your fields will be blessed. Your children and your crops will be blessed. The offspring of your herds and flocks will be blessed. Your fruit baskets and breadboards will be blessed. Wherever you go and whatever you do, you will be blessed. The Lord will conquer your enemies when they attack you. They will attack you from one direction, but they will scatter you. They will scatter from you in seven. The Lord will guarantee a blessing on everything you do and will fill your storehouses with grain. The Lord your God will bless you in the land he is giving you. If you listen to the voice of the commands of the Lord your God and walk in his ways, the Lord will establish you as his holy people, as he swore he would do. Then all the nations of the world will see that you are a people claimed by the Lord, and they will stand in awe of you. The Lord will give you prosperity in the land he swore to your ancestors to give you, blessing you with many children, numerous livestock, and abundant crops. The Lord will send rain at the proper time from his rich treasury in the heavens and will bless all the work you do. You will lend to many nations, but you will never need to borrow from them. If you listen to the commands of the Lord your God that I am giving you today, and if you carefully obey them, the Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you'll always be on top and never at the bottom. You must not turn away from any of the commands I am giving you today, nor follow after other gods and worship them. But if you refuse to listen to the Lord your God and do not obey all the commands and decrees I am giving you today, all these curses will come and overwhelm you. Your towns and your fields will be cursed. Your fruit baskets and breadboards will be cursed. Your children and your crops will be cursed. The offspring of your herds and flocks will be cursed. Wherever you go and whatever you do, you will be cursed. The Lord himself will send on you curses, confusion, and frustration in everything you do until at last you are completely destroyed for doing evil and abandoning me. The Lord will afflict you with diseases until none of you are left in the land you are about to enter and occupy. The Lord will strike you with wasting diseases, fever and inflammation, with scorching heat and drought and with blight and mildew. These disasters will pursue you until you die. The skies above will be as unyielding as bronze, and the earth beneath will be as hard as iron. The Lord will change the rain that falls on your land into powder, and the dust will pour down from the sky until you are destroyed. The Lord will cause you to be defeated by your enemies. You will attack your enemies from one direction, but you will scatter from them in seven. You will be the object of horror to all the kingdoms of the earth. Your corpses will be food for all the scavenging birds and wild animals, and no one will be there to chase them away. The Lord will afflict you with the boils of Egypt and with tumors, scurvy, and the itch from which you cannot be cured. The Lord will strike you with madness, blindness, and panic. You will grope around in broad daylight like a blind person groping in the darkness, but you will not find your way. You will be oppressed and robbed continually, and no one will come to save you. You will be engaged to a woman, but another man will sleep with her. You will build a house, but someone else will live in it. You will plant a vineyard, but you will never enjoy its fruit. Your ox will be butchered before your eyes, but you will not eat a single bite of the meat. Your donkey will be taken from you, never to be returned. Your sheep and goats will be given to your enemies, and no one will be there to help you. You will watch as your sons and daughters are taken away as slaves. Your heart will break for them, but you won't be able to help them. A foreign nation you have never heard about will eat the crops you worked so hard to grow. You will suffer under constant oppression and harsh treatment. You will go mad because of all the tragedy you see around you. The Lord will cover your knees and legs with incurable boils. In fact, you will be covered from head to foot. The Lord will exile you and your king to a nation unknown to you and your ancestors. There in exile, you will worship gods of wood and stone. You will become an object of horror, ridicule, and mockery among all the nations to which the Lord sends you.
You will plant much, but harvest little, for locusts will eat your crops. You will plant vineyards and care for them, but you will not drink the wine or eat the grapes, for worms will destroy the vines. You will grow olive trees throughout your land, but you will never use the olive oil, for the fruit will drop before it ripens. You will have sons and daughters, but you will lose them, for they will be led away into captivity. Swarms of insects will destroy your trees and crops. The foreigners living among you will become stronger and stronger, while you become weaker and weaker. They will lend money to you, but you will not lend to them. They will be the head, and you will be the tail. If you refuse to listen to the Lord your God and obey the commands and decrees he has given you, all these curses will pursue and overtake you until you are destroyed. These horrors will serve as a sign and a warning among you and your descendants forever. If you do not serve the Lord your God with joy and enthusiasm for the abundant benefits you have received, you will serve your enemies whom the Lord will send against you. You will be left hungry, thirsty, naked, and lacking in everything. The Lord will put an iron yoke on your neck and oppressing you harshly until he has destroyed you. The Lord will bring a distant nation against you from the end of the earth, and it will swoop down on you like a vulture. It is a nation whose language you do not understand, a fierce and heartless nation that shows no respect for the old and no pity for the young. Its armies will devour your livestock and crops, and you will be destroyed. They will leave you no grain, new wine, olive oil, calves, or lambs, and you will starve to death. They will attack your cities until all the fortified walls in your land, the walls you trusted in to protect you, until they're all knocked down. They will attack all the towns in the land the Lord your God has given you. The siege and terrible distress of the enemy's attack will be so severe that you will eat the flesh of your own sons and daughters whom the Lord your God has given you. The most tender-hearted man among you will have no compassion for his own brother, his beloved wife, and his surviving children. He will refuse to share with them the flesh he is devouring, the flesh of one of his own children. Because he has nothing else to eat during the siege and the terrible distress that your enemy will inflict on all your towns. The most tender and delicate woman among you, so delicate she would not so much as touch the ground with her foot, will be selfish toward her husband she loves and toward her own son or daughter. She will hide from them the afterbirth and the new baby she has born so that she herself can secretly eat them. She will have nothing else to eat during the siege and the terrible distress that your enemy will inflict on your towns. If you refuse to obey all the words of the instruction that are written in this book, and if you do not fear the glorious and awesome name of the Lord your God, then the Lord will overwhelm you and your children with indescribable plagues. These plagues will be intense and without relief, making you miserable and unbearably sick. He will afflict you with all the diseases of Egypt that you feared so much, and you will have no relief. The Lord will afflict you with every sickness and plague there is, even those not mentioned in this book of instruction, until you are destroyed. Though you become as numerous as the stars in the sky, few of you will be left because you would not listen to the Lord your God. Just as the Lord has found great pleasure in causing you to prosper and multiply, the Lord will find pleasure in destroying you. You will be torn from the land you are about to enter and occupy. For the Lord will scatter you among all the nations from one end of the earth to the other. There you will worship foreign gods that neither you nor your ancestors have known. Go ahead, gods made of wood and stone. There, among those nations, you will find no peace or place to rest. And the Lord will cause your heart to tremble, your eyesight to fail, and your soul to despair. Your life will constantly hang in the balance. You will live night and day in fear, unsure if you will survive. In the morning, you will say, "If only it were night." And in the evening, you will say, "If only it were morning." For you will be terrified by the awful horrors you see around you. Then the Lord will send you back to Egypt in ships to a destination I promised you would never see again. There you will offer to sell yourselves to your enemies as slaves, but no one will buy you. These are the words of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites while they were in the land of Moab, in addition to the words of the covenant he made with them at Mount Horeb. This is the word of the Lord. Into the depths of Mordor. What do we do with this? This is a challenge. This is a challenge. There are lots of people who refuse to read the scriptures because of texts like this. What kind of God would do this? Well, our challenge today is to see if in half an hour we can give us some hermeneutical guidelines on what to do with this text so that then we can get into the text itself with appropriate perspective. Into the depths of Mordor. How should we interpret texts like this? As a Christian, I mean, this is my Bible. What do I preach out of this? Well, in order to understand a text like this, a couple of things to help us. On your notes, I've got a whole bunch of things listed. We need to recognize that texts like this would not have been shocking or troubling to ancient audiences. That comes as a surprise to lots of people. This text is very much at home in the ancient world out of which it came and to which it speaks. It may not be at home to us Christians with our sanitized view of scripture, spiritual realities, but it would not have been strange to them at all. In the first place, curses were a fixed part of the ancient Near Eastern treaty form. Did you notice? I read that last verse intentionally. These are the words of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites while they were in the land of Moab, in addition to the words of the covenant he made with them at Mount Horeb. What's been happening on the plains of Moab, this generation, getting ready to move into the promised land, God is renewing the covenant with them. They weren't there at Sinai. So we have to go through these covenantal motions. This text is part of the covenant document, which means that in the end, if 586 BC, when Jerusalem falls to Babylon, if it hadn't happened, the covenant would have been off. That it happened proves the covenant is on. These are the words of the... And they were part of ancient Near Eastern treaty form. I've shown you something like this before. I hope it's big enough for you to understand. This is Ken Kitchen's, an adaptation of what Ken Kitchen has done in showing how biblical covenants relate structurally to extra-biblical covenants. And we've got different kinds. Neo-Assyrian, these are from the 8th and 7th centuries B.C. This is from the same time. It's Aramean. Here is Exodus and Deuteronomy pattern. And here's the Hittite pattern from 1200, 1300 B.C., about the time of Moses. And you can see from that the biblical pattern is much closer to this pattern than to that one. Whoops. Too quickly. A review. There we go. Here we go. The important thing to notice is that every one of these has green. The curses. They are a fixed element in treaties.
in covenants. So that if the Bible presents Israel's relationship to God as a covenantal relationship, we expect to have this there. So that's an important thing to notice. We'll come back and talk about the blessings. This one actually has blessing. These over here have no blessings. The good news is that the biblical one starts out with the blessings. In fact, that's the default. That's the vision. And we'll have more to say about that. So, don't be surprised that this is in the Bible. It's a common part of the ancient way of thinking about. Here's one from the Hittites. This is good devotional reading. The treaty between Shatawaza of Mitanni and Sopalulumua of Hatti. They, the oath gods, shall stand and listen to you and be witnesses to these words of the treaty. If you, Prince Shatawaza, and you Hurrians, do not observe the words of the treaty, the gods, lords of the oath, shall destroy you and Hurrians together with your land and wives and your possessions. They will draw you out like malt from its husk, and as one does not get a plant from stony ground, so you together with any other wife whom you might take in place of my daughter, and you Hurrians together with your wives, your sons, and your land, shall have no progeny. And these gods, who are lords of the oath, shall allot you poverty and destitution. And you, Shatawaza, they shall overthrow your throne. And you, Shatawaza, these oath gods shall snap you off like a reed together with your land. Your name and your progeny by any other wife whom you might take shall be eradicated from the earth. And you, Shatawaza, together with your land, because of not delivering goodness and recovery among the Hurrians, you shall be eradicated. The ground shall be ice so that you will slip. The ground of your land shall be a marsh of, and then there's a break, so that if you will certainly sink and be unable to cross, you, Shatawaza, and the Hurrians shall be the enemies of the thousands gods. They shall defeat you. I could read you the treaties of Esarhaddon from the 8th century. The center of gravity for the whole document is the curses. And he lists, you know, all the gods who will invoke their unique curses upon the subject if he doesn't keep the covenant. So this is part of that world. Don't be surprised to find it in the Bible. Second, the curses echo expressions found in ancient Near Eastern texts. There should be an S on there. This is why I sent you an extra PDF with a chart, those of you who are on the mailing list and you bother to look. But on the left-hand side, I've got the biblical verses from Deuteronomy, and on the right-hand side, I've got curses from Esarhaddon text, which sounds so similar. We'll pick it up at verse 23. And the heavens over your head shall be bronze, and the earth under you shall be iron. The Lord will make the rain of your land powder. From heaven dust shall come down on the earth until you're... That's the Bible. Here is Esarhaddon's vassal treaty. May they make your ground like iron so that nothing can sprout from it. Just as rain does not fall from a brazen heaven, so may rain and dew not come upon your fields and your meadows. Instead of dew, may burning coals rain on your land. Verse 26 of Deuteronomy. And your dead body shall be food for all the birds of the air and for the beasts of the earth, and there shall be no one to frighten them away. May Ninurta, the foremost among the gods, fell you with his fierce arrow. May he fill the plain with your blood and feed your flesh to the eagle and the vulture. 27. The Lord will strike you with boils of Egypt and with tumors and scabs and itch, of which you cannot be healed. And then vassal treaty. May Sin, this is not, it's capital S-I-N, it's the name of a god. May Sin, the brightness of heaven and earth, clothe you with leprosy and forbid your entering into the presence of the gods and the king. We could go through all of this. There are lots of echoes of that. In fact, the echoes are so strong that in critical scholarship, And this is a part of critical scholarly orthodoxy to which we have to respond in other circles, not here in class. Critical scholars these days are arguing that Deuteronomy was written in response to the vassal treaties of Esarhaddon in about 7th century, 6th century B.C. Moses is a fictional character, but this was written as a theological document in response to the Assyrian. The links are that tight. In any case, the curses echo expression. Oh, you don't have to go outside the Bible to discover this kind of thing is common outside Israel. Have you read the book of Job lately? Job is not an Israelite. He's from the land of Uz. And his friends are not Israelites either. They come from Teman, Bildad, the Shuhite, the smallest man in the Bible. Job 31:1. Here's Job, who is not an Israelite, talking. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? Is not calamity for the upright, for the unrighteous, and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does he not see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance and God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way and my heart has gone after my eyes, if a spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. Let what grows for me be rooted out. If my heart has been enticed toward a woman and I have lain in wait for at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another and let others bow down to her on her. For that would be a heinous crime and would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges. For that would be the fire that consumes as far as Abaddon, and it would burn to the root all my increase. If I have rejected the cause of my manservant and maidservant when they brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he makes inquiry, what will I answer them? Did he not who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us of the womb? And then he goes on and lists a whole bunch of other. This is what I call Job's Boy Scouts code of honor. And he lists a whole bunch of things. If I have done this, then this is the due reward for my, I deserve what I have been getting. If I have made gold my trust or called fine gold my confidence, this is the best verse in Scripture of stuff being an idol. My trust, that's the word for religious devotion. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was abundant, because my hand had found much, if I have looked at the sun when it shone or the moon moving in splendor, my heart has been secretly enticed and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be iniquity to be punished by the judges. I would have been false to my gods if I had been rejoiced at the ruin of my enemy, whatever else. This is common in that ancient world. And so we need to understand this. It shouldn't shock us. Second, we need to recognize that the curses come after unbelievably profuse blessings. Now, some of you will say, the blessings are only 14 verses, the curses are 55 verses. That's where the Old Testament is. I've got news for you. The blessing is the default. This is the default, and it is so profuse, you don't need to add any detail. The